So things are coming thick and fast now at this stage of the season. Welcome to another Two Barry's Tennis Takeaway. Mr. Cowan is still in Milan, but he's got a flight to catch fairly shortly. So we're going to talk firstly about the week that you've witnessed, Bazza. And Yannick Sinner, or should it be Yannick Stunner, has absolutely taken Italy by storm, taken the tennis world by storm, certainly in what he's achieved by winning the next-gen title.
Incredible. Yeah, I mean, after last night, I mean, we the tennis world knew he was great, but probably didn't know he was as great as early as this in his career. I mean, how he has improved this year. He's gone basically from no ranking at the start of the year, progressing his way through the futures. And what great players. And I mean, we often use, maybe we're all guilty of it, we overuse that word. But what the really, truly world-class players have is they just improve so quickly in front of your own eyes. And even this week, he's a much better player yesterday than he was at the beginning of the week. I mean, phenomenal. I mean, the backhand, in 3 years of the event, Barry, no one has hit the backhand harder than Sinner. And when you think that we've had Rublev, we think we've had Khachanov, Medvedev was there a couple of years ago. Last year, of course, Tsitsipas, who had made a final of a Masters event a couple of months before. You know, in my opinion, and it wasn't just me alone, that was the best level of tennis that I've seen in 3 years of the event. So the game is in great hands. Tough for Dimonor, but he just got hit off the court by an 18-year-old who has impressed many. And I don't think there's anyone that has any doubts, because sometimes you see a young player emerge and there might be 25% think he's going to win Grand Slam, 25% think he's going to be top 10, and there may be a few that aren't so sure. Everyone is convinced that Sinner is going to the very, very top.
He certainly looks it, and for a guy who is only 18, it was just remarkable, the poise, the calm, but also the determination to basically go after any ball he could and pretty much pull them off most of the time. Obviously, he did have the loss in the round robins, but that's after he'd qualified when Hugo Humbert played a very fine match to beat him. But he bounced straight back, obviously, in his semi-final to beat Kecmanovic, as he did, from a set down, it must be said. So he took a little while to sort of get into that. But once he did, and of course the crowd, what atmosphere in this Allianz Cloud Arena this year. Of course, as you mentioned last time, this is the same place where Federer won his first title all those years ago. So who knows where Sinner might go from here with this title to his name. But it struck me, Bazza, you were very involved in the sort of post-match interviews and interviewing players between matches during the days and getting a lot of information about them, that the relationship he has with his coach, Riccardo Piatti, is just such a positive one. It looks so good for the sport because they obviously debate things. Sinner has a real intelligence about him, but also the sense of humour, the sense of fun that it is for him to play there, and that sort of the laughter, the banter between the two as well.
Oh, what a lovely guy Sinner is, very down to earth. But you're absolutely right. Sitting courtside, you could just, in his eyes, someone who has got a real determination. And I actually sat down with Riccardo Piatti earlier in the week and did a fascinating 20-minute interview with Riccardo. I've known Riccardo for years, ever since he initially started working with Ljubicic. And, you know, since Ljubicic, he's worked with Djokovic, he's worked with Gasquet, he's worked with, obviously, Cioric, he worked with Raonic when he made Wimbledon final. And, you know, Sinner didn't play any juniors. And Riccardo said at 13, it was not about, in fact, he didn't really care whether he won or lost. It was about developing his game, that ultimately when he got to a stage where now he is overtaking a lot of those other 18-year-olds that maybe have been focused on results, results, results. And I mean, that is one of the biggest downfalls of federations. I mean, obviously being from the UK, I know the mistakes that the LTA make in Britain, that there's so much emphasis on results at a young age that everyone loses sight. When I say everyone, but people around juniors, they lose sight of actually what the junior game is for, is to develop your tennis, your mentality, your fitness for the pro game. And, you know, I've sort of jokingly said to the guys I was with this week, I said, if I was in charge of the under 14 development, I'd send all the under 14s off to skiing for a week.
Funny you should say maybe... that. I was just going to mention the fact that, you know, he was a junior champion, wasn't he? Skiing, that was his focus. And it seemed to be that he talked about it at one point, saying that that was so important to him in terms of dealing with pressure, because you've got to make, you know, judgments so quickly when you're on the ski slopes hurtling down a mountain. And obviously he's able to be been able to do that in matches.
Yeah, but we see Djokovic in incredible positions to be able to get the ball back and turn defense into attack on the stretch, open stance, sliding. Sinner, the same. Federer moves unbelievably well. Different type of mover, of course, but Federer did a lot of skiing. You know, I mean, I do think skiing is important, but please, any parents that have children, and I'm not just saying it now, I'm not just reacting to what I've seen this week. It's something that I felt for a long time. Parents, please let your children play other sports. It doesn't have to be tennis from the age of 6, 7, 8. Play other sports. And, you know, as Ricardo also said to me, you know, age 13, he was only playing tennis twice a week.
It's amazing, isn't it? I mean, when you think of the sort of hot housing of so many youngsters by that age in tennis, but you're absolutely right, Bezza. It is a fascinating interview that you did with Piatti, and I'd suggest to anybody who hasn't heard it, who's listening to this, that go and find it on the ATP Tennis Radio feed of that, because the exclusive interviews that you've done, a whole host of those are posted online, and it is well worth a listen. Who else did you enjoy talking to the most?
Interviewed Michael Emer, who it was fascinating because, you know, great story. And I was originally from Ethiopia, and he was talking to me saying, you know, I want to go back to Ethiopia because, you know, I haven't been back for years, but the problems that I've had. But he said, one of the biggest problems I have is my father. He said, because he's grumpy if he doesn't run. Now, his dad is an ex 10,000K and marathon runner. And he has to go and do 10K. If he doesn't do 10K run in the morning, he's grumpy. So maybe that's where we're all going wrong.
Yeah, if he did 10,000K, that might be a bit much. But yeah, 10K, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Oh, did I say 10,000K? Yeah, oh, my goodness. Well, that's probably about what he would do anyway, isn't it?
He's probably run that many. He probably has. Yeah. But that was fun to listen to as well. In terms of the tennis, though, Dimonor obviously doing a great job to get through unbeaten to the final, but then he was, as you say, kind of blitzed off the court by Sinner's excellence last night. But overall, I mean, he'll be bitterly disappointed that he didn't pick up the title, having finished runner-up last year to Tsitsipas. But of course, he can still come back next year, can't he? He'll still be young enough to do that. In terms of the others who played in the draws, I mean, who else impressed you or surprised you or disappointed you?
Very impressed with Dimonor, even though he lost in the final. He has improved as a player. He's become a lot more aggressive. He's playing further up the court. I expect another wonderful year for Dimonor. I was actually impressed with Tiafoe. Tiafoe's had a difficult year. I think, you know, what happened in Australia, probably in hindsight, was probably the worst thing that happened to him, because maybe it gave him a false sense of his standing of where he was at that time. I don't think he was necessarily ready back in January to reach the quarterfinals. And I think it's taken him a time of readjustment. But I think I've seen in the last month or so, Barry, that he's starting to keep the focus for longer periods. However, it was, you know, fascinating. We had the benefit of the coaching and being able to hear what the coaches were saying at the end of sets, changeovers, and Zach Evenden, his coach, apart from the having to bleep it out for TV, was just saying, you know, in that last match, I want unconditional commitment. Mm-hmm. Give me one set. Take out the score. It's not about trying to win three sets. Give me one set of unconditional focus. And I think that those words really summed up Tiafoe, that he's just not able, he might never get it, but he's not able at the moment to be able to go for long periods without having a dip. And that for me was what was so amazing last night with with that Sinner Demonor final, because if Sinner had dropped his guard, then I was sitting courtside thinking Demonor could easily rattle off the third and fourth very sets very quickly.
Now, you've been a long-time critic of the idea of having on-court coaching, but obviously the way it's set up for the next gen, at least they can put on the headsets. So where do you stand now?
I'm still against it. Where I like it at the next gen is because the next gen's gone for a different feel, hasn't it? Mm-hmm. It's gone for a different look. They're trying out certain rules. I just think it works in that environment. I like Davis Cup works with a captain. Fed Cup, we're going to talk a little bit later on about the Fed Cup final, which has been an amazing couple of days. It works. The main tour is different. Grand Slams are different. Masters are different. I'm very open to maybe them being creative in some 250s. I do feel that maybe that should be something that they could potentially look at in some 250s. Yeah. Maybe play around with the rules. Maybe see the rules that we've had this week in the next gen, best of five sets, first to four games, sudden death at Juice. I'm not against that in some of the 250s that are struggling. And I think by being a little bit creative and inventive might actually help some of those tournaments, because at the end of the day, tournaments are there to make money.
So this has been the third edition, Bazza. And is the plan still to pursue it at the same venue over the next few years? What's the latest on it?
Yeah, definitely the plan is. I think that's something that, you know, moving forward, that they're very happy. Obviously, that the whole dynamics will change in 2021, isn't it, when the ATP finals come to Turin.
Yes.
So you'll have back-to-back. Who knows, in the future, it might move. You know, maybe the Italians might not want Milan, then Turin, 2 weeks. But I think the ATP have shown that it is a success. And maybe the women might just feel a little bit jealous that, well, actually, hang on, look at what it's done. It's given the younger players a chance to shine. I think the whole marketing campaign throughout the year helps the players. It's their goal, isn't it? A lot of them at the beginning of the season, I want to qualify for the next gen finals. I think it's been 3 years where I really can't think of a negative. I guess the only thing you could say, well, Shapovalov didn't play last year. Shapovalov didn't play this year. That would be the only, but we talked about that last week, didn't we? That would be the only slight negative. But I don't think during this week, I didn't hear anyone say, oh, it's a shame Shapovalov's not here. It gave the other guys a chance to be able to show how good they are.
And having now had three editions of this, is there any particular change in terms of the rules they have there, the innovations that you would absolutely want them to take onto the main tour?
Crowd movement at the side.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're probably with me there. I think that's something that tennis has been kind of stuck in their ways a little bit too much. I think crowd involvement is good. And obviously the 1-5-1 rule, which is we have on tour at the moment. So 1 minute when you walk on court for the coin toss before you start hitting, then a 5 minute knock up. And then as soon as the umpire calls time, then you're ready. You've got to be ready within 1 minute. If you're not ready, then it's a warning. In the next gen, it's 1-3-1. And I think there's certainly on the ATP, there's the will to maybe go that way. That's certainly the rumours and the whispers I'm getting from Milan that potentially we might start to see on the main tour it reduced from 1-5-1 currently. I mean, it's a step-by-step, isn't it? Chris Kermode has often said, I would like to see to scrap the knock-up. But there isn't resistance to reducing it.
Okay, well, we'll see whether that transpires in due course. But of course, you're shortly off to the airport and you're flying back to London. And today, as we speak, of course, later on today, the NITO ATP finals get underway at London's O2 Arena, the 11th time. I mean, it's amazing that we've had a decade already there. But what a lineup we have in store. The top eight who've come through, of course, Nadal, Djokovic, Federer, Medvedev, Team Tsitsipas, Zverev and Berrettini. Last year, Tsitsipas was winning the next gen finals. Now he's in the main event in London. And it is a fascinating lineup of the established stars, of course, but also the youngsters who've made such an impression. Medvedev in particular, who's had such a great season. He's the fourth seed behind the top triumvirate, the greats of Nadal, Djokovic and Federer. And great that Nadal, Baza, after pulling out of Paris, that he's been able to step up here and says that the abdomen is okay, we hope, and he's ready to go.
It was a seamless transition, wasn't it, from the next-gen finals to the ATP finals when you got in the Dolls group. Zverev, Tsitsipas and Medvedev, who, in very much those three, were involved in one way or another in the first next-gen finals. Yeah, I think it's great news that it seems Rafa's fit. Let's hope so. And it would cap off an amazing year for Rafa. But we got sort of the dynamics, the extra dynamics of world number one, and with Djokovic and Nadal. And did you know, Barry, I was actually looking at it, and if I can sort of throw one out there, you know, the only way that Djokovic can stop Nadal being world number one at the end of the week, mm-hmm. if he plays him in the semi-finals and beats him. So if Djokovic has won two and has already qualified, and Nadal's going to win the group, what does he do? Should we move on?
That's, yeah. Conspiracy theories, Baza. Very good. Excellent. We'll enjoy that. We'll look forward to how it goes over the next few days in the round robin. But in terms of Djokovic kicking things off, in fact, against Berrettini, what price on an Italian winning in London as well as one winning in Milan?
Well, if I just go on some of the Italian journalists who I spoke to, unlikely. I think they felt the worst possible draw for Berrettini was to be drawn against Djokovic instead of Nadal, Federer instead of Medvedev, Thiem instead of Tsitsipas.
Oh dear.
So yes, just the matchups. It's been an amazing achievement to even qualify, but yeah, I just look at that first match. I think that's rough. I mean, the last person you want to play when you're making your debut at the ATP Finals, if you're a big server, is Djokovic, especially the form that Novak's in. So I think for Berrettini, none of you agree, Barry, but that's looking like certainly played three. I don't see him beating Djokovic. I don't see him beating Federer. I know Thiem has kind of struggled in the past, the ATP Finals. I actually think Thiem will do all right this week. I don't think he'll get out of that group, but I think we will see a very good performance from Thiem. So I think it will be played three for Berrettini, and I don't see him winning one.
I was just looking at the list in terms of the wins, losses for each player against the other this year. Nadal is leading those. He's had 8 wins. He's had 4 losses against the others. Djokovic with 7 wins, 5 losses. Thiem actually with 7 wins, 4 losses. And of course, there is a fourth one, and that's Medvedev. 6 wins and 5 losses. But the others, including Roger, have losing records against them. And indeed, Roger with a losing record against Thiem. But obviously, we're talking on a Sunday morning. That could be a different case this evening. And for Djokovic, Berrettini, well, that they'll go into that with no previous against one another. But also in the doubles, we must say a big shout out to Britain's Joe Salisbury, because he is the only British representative this time in the finals, and he's alongside Rajiv Ram as the fifth seed. So they've had a tremendous year, a partnership that has lasted some time, but certainly worthy of their place in this elite company.
Yeah, very much so. The doubles is wide open. We sort of say that year on year. Mahou and Herbert, they played brilliant tennis in Paris. You sort of feel that they are probably up there with Cabal and Farah. Cabal and Farah, who were able to win, they won Wimbledon and the US Open. So I think those two pairs probably would be the standout pairs. Just going back to the Nadal, Zverev, Tsitsipas, Medvedev group, Barry, I think it's really fascinating, that group. I really do. And so much of it will depend, I think, on Sunday, what happens on Sunday. I think that will really shape the group. If Nadal beats Zverev, which I do expect he will do. Was it 5? He's won all 5 meetings.
And Medvedev won all 5 against Tsitsipas.
And has got under the skin, hasn't he, of Tsitsipas?
Yeah, there could be a bit of needle again, I guess.
Yeah, which is what we like. I would. Are we going to go tips? Are we going to go predictions?
Go for it.
We're going to put our neck on the line.
You are.
Well, I'll go first. How about that? Because usually I'm the one who says, come on, Barry, you go first.
Yeah.
I think Djokovic and Federer will come through the group. It wouldn't surprise me if Fed beats Djokovic in the group. Wouldn't surprise me. I certainly don't see Federer beating Djokovic if they played in the final. So I think I will go for Djokovic to win the group, Federer to come second. And I am going to go for Nadal to win the group and Medvedev to come second. And which obviously won't all happen. So how many wrong will I get? And I think Djokovic and Fed will make final and Djokovic will win it. That's
You went first. I perhaps should have gone first and said the similar thing, really. I mean, I find it hard to think that as much as I was thrilled that Berrettini got through, because I backed him from some way back to do so. But I agree, I'd be very surprised if he got out of the group. I think Zverev has had still, you know, trouble with his serve at times, and just the inner belief maybe isn't there where it was. Of course, he played brilliantly last year to take the title. But remember, he had a poor start, didn't he? And it really took the best from Lendl to get in his head and get him sorted. And then he did play well. But he's had a struggle this year. And I would be surprised if he made it to the last four. Tsitsipas, I think, certainly could. And then in terms of Rafa, well, I think that is still a question mark, because it worries me that it's apparently a pretty slick surface this year. I think he's finding it difficult with the timing in practice, maybe. And then, you know, if he's going after things and running around as he will be hurtling around that court as he normally does, you just wonder, will the body stand up to the rigors of it? But if he doesn't, then I think, you know, a Djokovic-Federer final does seem a very likely prospect. And again, I think you have to go with Novak, because when they've played there come the crunch, you know, in finals, Djokovic has produced it. And we know how well he is, how good he is, great he is at turning it on when he really has to.
I think it's a really good point what you made about the surface. And that's, I think, what we both hear. Paris was quick. I look at the guys in Nadal's group, and Zverev historically is a slow starter. He's not someone who comes out and gets on the front foot early. He might, with the nerves of having to defend the title and unsure what Rafa's like, I'm not so sure Zverev's going to go after that. So Nadal might be able to work his way into that first match. And then you look at Medvedev and Tsitsipas. I think both, you know, Medvedev, as we know, has contributed so much, but will he be able to rush Nadal early on? I mean, if you allow Nadal to play, it doesn't matter whether it's, you know, medium pace, hard court, or very quick grass court, Nadal can adjust. So I think we're sort of in agreement that the first match will probably give us a better indication of Rafa.
I think so. I think it will. I mean, I think Medvedev is very much the kind of joker in the pack. He's always the one. But I think he could be the one, if anyone, to sort of surprise the absolute hierarchy at the very top there, as he has done through much of the year. So I would put him as my kind of not too dark horse, really, as somebody who could prevent what we both feel, I think, is likely to be Djokovic-Federer in the final. In terms of what else is going on, you mentioned briefly the fact of the Fed Cup final. And as we speak, Baza, I mean, we were hoping to be able to wrap it up by the time we got to this podcast. We have to get this recorded now. But it has gone to a fifth and deciding rubber in Perth. What a match it has been, because day one, for anybody who hasn't followed it, well, day one began with Kristina Mladenovic for France away to Australia in Perth, and just blitzing her way through Alia Tomljanovic, who was called up for the team by Alicia Molik and struggled on her debut with that in the final, and got beaten 6-1, 6-1. Then Ash Barty, world number one, brilliant finish to her tour year, of course, by winning the WTA finals in Shenzhen. And she then double bagels Caroline Garcia, which was an amazing response to that. However, come today, Mladenovic comes from a set down in the second set, and beats Barty 7-6 in a final set tiebreak. It goes to a fourth rubber. Consequently, we have Tomljanovic playing again. She was picked again, and she did a really fine job because she beat the French replacement, Pauline Parmentier, brought in by their captain, Julien Beneteau, to replace Garcia. And Tomljanovic came through that 6-4, 7-5, which means two rubbers apiece. This, of course, the last traditional final, as it were, the old style of Fed Cup, which will be replaced next year by a thing similar to the new style Davis Cup. But record crowds in Perth, absolutely lapping it up. And I can tell you, as I speak, the first game of the deciding doubles, which is between Barty and Sam Stosur against Garcia and Mladenovic. And it's been a break of serve by the Australians. So they are currently one love up in that final rubber. But just amazing for the competition to reach such a conclusion.
And who would have thought that the scoring would go the way it did, well, has gone so far, with Barty losing to Mladenovic, who is starting to get back to some sort of form after, what was it, last year, the sort of wretched run where she really struggled to claim any wins. It was something like 15 losses in a row. Garcia, I mean, the tennis just continues to amaze us all, doesn't it? Garcia, what was she, 4 in the world? Mm-hmm. Her career high? Loses Love and Love? I mean, that is a huge, huge surprise. But I mean, we are neutral, obviously. But it would cap off an amazing year for Barty if she was the hero. That kind of feels like it's sort of written in the stars that Barty and Stosur, who's contributed so much to Australian tennis over the year, that feels like that would probably be the likely outcome.
Of course, Garcia and Mladenovic, I mean, early days in their careers, they had a great partnership, great friendship together, and then they fell out big time, didn't they? So they're back together, obviously playing for their country at least. And that's going to be a real test of character for them, in front of such a, you know, a passionate partisan crowd in Perth.
Yeah, the Aussies like to get their teeth into matches, don't they? It was quite surprising that they fell out. I mean, you know, who knows, looking from the outside, what were the main contributing factors? But you know, that's the hardest part. I mean, I think that always shows up under the most extreme pressures. Of whether, I think, in doubles, that you really generally need to get on. I mean, there are exceptions, yes, one or two, but over the years, you've got to want the best for your partner.
Indeed. Well, talking of getting on, you need to get on, I know. You've got to get off to the airport. Safe journey back to London, and I hope you have a great time at the O2, and I'm sure next week we'll have a quick look back at the end result. But that is ongoing. We are ongoing through to the O2 coming up very shortly. And we'll be back with another podcast. In fact, we'll be back with it from Madrid, because hot on the heels, of course, of what's going to happen in London over the next week will be the Davis Cup finals in Madrid. And Bazza and I are both going to be there. So we look forward to doing that, and to look forward to your company then. Bye for now.